So which one's on the board? 26 is on the board, but is 25? Oh, you read that one already? Okay, so text 26 and 27. Sri Hiranyakashipur Uvacha Kalpante Kala Srishtena Yo Andena Tamasavritam Abhivyana Jagat Idam Svayanjoti Sva Rochisa Sri Hiranyakashipur Uvacha Kalpante Kala Shishtena Yondena Tamasavritam Abhivyana Jagat Idam Svayanjoti Svarochisa Sri Hiranyakashipur Vacha Kalpante Kala Shristena Yondena Tamasavritam Abhivyana Jagat Idam Svayanjoti Svarochisa Sri Hiranyakashipur Vacha Kalpante Kala Shristena Yondena Tamasavritam Abhivyana Jagat Idam Svayanjoti Svayorochisa Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha Kalpante Kala Shristena Yondena Tamasavritam Abhivyana Jagat Idam Svayanjoti Svarochisa Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha Kalpante Kala Shristena Yondena Tamasavritam Abhivyana Jagat Idam Svayanjoti Svarochisa. I'll read the second verse, 27. Atmanatri vrita chedam sri jatyavati lumpati rajasatvatamo damne paraya mahate namaha. So word for word meaning. Sri Hiranyakashipu uvacha. Hiranyakashipu said, Kalpa ante, at the end of every day of Lord Brahma. Kala Shistena, created by the time factor. Ya, he who, Andena, by dense darkness. Tamasa, by ignorance. Avritam, covered. Abhivyanak, manifested. Jagat, cosmic manifestation. Idam, this, Svayam Jyoti, self-effulgent. Svarochisa, by his bodily rays. Atmana, by himself. Trivrita, conducted by the three modes of material nature. Cha, also, idam, this material world. Sri Jati, creates. Avati, maintains. Lumpati, annihilates. Rajaha, of the mode of passion. Sattva, the mode of goodness. Tamaha, and the mode of ignorance. Damne, unto the Supreme Lord. Paraya, unto the Supreme. Mahate, unto the Great. Namaha, my respectful obeisances. So translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord within this universe. At the end of each day of His life, the universe is fully covered with dense darkness by the influence of time. And then again, during His next day, that self-effulgent Lord, by His own effulgence, manifests, maintains, and destroys the entire cosmic manifestation through the material energy, which is invested with the three modes of material nature. He, Lord Brahma, is the shelter of those modes of nature, Sattvagun, Rajagun, and Tamagun. Purport. The words Abhivyanag Jagat Idam refer to He who creates this cosmic manifestation. The original creator is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Janmadyasya Yata. Lord Brahma is the secondary creator. When Lord Brahma is empowered by Lord Krishna as the engineer to create the phenomenal world, he becomes a supremely powerful feature within this universe. The total material energy is created by Krishna and later taken advantage of that. Taken advantage of all that has necessarily been created, Lord Brahma engineers the entire phenomenal universe. At the end of Lord Brahma's day, everything up to Svargaloka is inundated with water, and the next morning, when there is darkness in the universe, Brahma again brings the phenomenal manifestation into existence. Therefore, he is described here as he who manifests this universe. Trin Gunan Vrinoti, Lord Brahma takes advantage of the three modes of material nature. Prakriti, material nature, is described here as Tri Vrata, the source of the three material modes. Srila Madhavacharya comments in this connection that Tri Vrita means Prakritya. Thus, Lord Krishna is the original creator and Lord Brahma is the original engineer. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Jinitas Mai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Truvya Sakripa Sinavavita Paritana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasri Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Omkar Prabhu couldn't make it today, so we'll try to give some kind of class here this morning. Up to this particular point, we've been reading about Hiranyakashipu's plan. His plan was to become immortal. And as we're progressing here, we're seeing that Lord Brahma, he's going to give some benediction or boons to Hiranyakashipu. But the foolishness of it all is that Hiranyakashipu is thinking that he'll become immortal. And we see that this is the foolishness of material society also. Everyone is working in such a way, not remembering that this material world is a temporary place, and it's a place of so much suffering and so much anxiety. And in this particular pastime of Hiranyakashipu, it's in one sense, it's an allegory story also in terms of how the living entity in the material world functions and what motivates a living entity in the material world. And that motivation is usually that they want to be the supreme. In this particular purport, it's described that Krishna is the supreme, but that Lord Brahma, he's simply the engineer. And because he's the engineer, it's conceived that he's the supreme in this particular universe. He may be to a certain degree, but Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, as Papa describes in the purport here. So this is the illusion of the conditioned living entities in the material world. It reminds me of a particular pastime, and maybe I can get a little help on it. It's in relationship to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada. Isn't it? Where Prabhupada was describing to him his position, because at that time there was some kind of situation that occurred, and I guess that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was a senior devotee and a very powerful preacher, and Prabhupada tried to help him understand his position, and Prabhupada said that there's this whole universe, within this universe there's this world, within this world there's this country, and then within this country there's this city, and within this city there's a particular block, and within this block there's a particular building, and within this building is Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And we're thinking that we're the supreme. So in reality, the idea of the story is that we're thinking that we're someone, but in comparison to what the creation is of this material world, we're simply infinitesimal little sparks of the supreme. Practically, we have no ability whatsoever. And at the same time, we're thinking that we're the supreme enjoyers. And we see that this is all carried out by the modes, the material nature. We're thinking that we're controlling, but actually we're acting on the principle of motive, ignorance, passion, or even goodness, maybe a little bit of goodness. But due to these modes of material nature, we think we're in control. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankaravi mudhatma kartaham iti manyate. We're being pushed around by the three modes, but we feel and we think and we're convinced that we're in control. But at any moment, there can be some difficulty and problem, and immediately annihilation. And in Krishna consciousness, we're trying to understand this point. And the only way that you can understand this point is by, first of all, understanding we're not the body. And even though Hiranyakashipu was so extremely powerful, so powerful that he could control the demigods, he actually could force rain. He could force so many things that the demigods are in control of, just by his will, by his power. Everyone was submissive to him. So we see that in the material world, everyone wants or desires to have that kind of strength or potency. Even a rich man we see in the material world, he's very, very wealthy. His energy can go from here to China. You know, a very powerful, rich, industrialist person. He can have a place in China, and he can be in America. But everyone in China will do whatever he wants while he's living in America. So even in the material world, we see the potency of a mortal, just an ordinary mortal living entity. And what to speak of someone like Hiranyakashipu, who by austerity and penance was able to accomplish this austerity and develop so much power. So another interesting point on this is that we see that the modes of material nature, no one can circumvent them. No one. We may think that we're very powerful, but no one can overcome material law, the stringent material energy. She acts under the instruction of the Supreme Lord. And regardless of who one is, one cannot overcome her. It doesn't matter what you do. If you take birth, you must die. There's no question. Regardless of who you are, what you may do, one has to leave this material world. The body must die, although the soul will continue. But we see that we're always trying to figure out how to circumvent this particular law of nature. Law is law. We can believe or not believe, but the law will take effect. You can believe or not believe, it doesn't matter. Whatever your speculation is, the stringent law will work. Just like if you overeat, the law of nature is that you'll become sick. It doesn't matter. Whoever you are, it's regardless of the individual. The law of nature works in that capacity. If you take birth, you must die. But in the course of life, we try to forget this particular stringent law. We try in all kinds of capacities within our ability to try to circumvent these laws. But at each point, we're being frustrated. So Hiranyakashipu himself, although a very powerful individual, he tried to circumvent the law of nature, which is under the control of the Supreme Lord. And he tried to somehow or other, by trickery, become immortal. This desire or idea of immortality is there within all of us because that's our nature. We're by nature immortal. The soul is immortal. And the difficulty, though, is that we somehow or other, by this desire of ours, came to the material world. We developed a body from this desire. And we're trying to take this body to that platform of immortality, which is impossible. It's simply useless waste of time and energy. And here, although Hiranyakashipu is so powerful, he still couldn't circumvent it. What to speak of our position, like who we are and what we are in the material world? Again, it comes down to that story. We're thinking we're so powerful, and I may be the president of this community, but the minute I step out on Venice Boulevard, who really cares? There can be like a street person, and I could tell him, don't you know who I am? He could be just strolling along in his shopping cart, and I could tell him, do you know what my position is? And he could just look at me and throw a curse word at me and keep moving and could care less who I am, what I am, what I represent. So that's really our position. Who are we? We're really nothing. We're simply infinitesimal little living entities who are somehow or other caught up in this big world of fantasy and trying to somehow circumvent material energy, which is impossible. And this story elaborates this very thoroughly. And of course, we do know that ultimately this pastime was for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord because he needed a good fight. And we heard several days ago that that's the nature of boys and men. They like to fight. So Krishna likes to fight. And we know that's ultimately the goal of this pastime. But It also gives us a lot of instruction of how we should conduct our life in terms of understanding what is the purpose of life and not become caught up in all these little toys that the material world or the material energy offers us every single day in the form of different bodies, sense gratification, power, you know, so-called intelligence, influence, wealth, austerity. All these things are there to distract us from the real goal of life, which is to become a devotee, to become surrendered at the lotus feet of Krishna. Papa gives the example in the, I think it's Lord Kapila, gives the example of a child that's down by the ocean. And this child becomes very much engrossed in developing sandcastles, so many wonderful things. I'm sure most of us have been down by the ocean where people are making sandcastles and so many far out little artistic displays out of the sand. And the parent is sitting and watching as the child's playing. The parent realizes that at one particular point, this has to stop. It has to, because it might get dark and the tide of the ocean may come up. And the child completely forgets. It actually just so engrossed in playing with the sand that it doesn't care about anything, eating or sleeping, anything. It just becomes, that child simply becomes engrossed in the playful activity of building sandcastles. So at a particular point, the parent comes to the child and wants the child to go. It's time to go. The tide's going to come up and wash away the sandcastle. It's going to get dark. We have to go home. But the child is kicking and crying and screaming and yelling and saying, I hate you. You don't want me to be happy. You just simply want me to suffer. And seriously doing this, crying like anything. As a father, I've experienced it, so I know what I'm talking about. Down by the ocean. So we see that the child, so engrossed in its activity, it can't give it up. So this is our position in the material world. We're so engrossed in material energy and in our bodies and minds that when a pure devotee of the Lord comes by and gives us good instruction, don't waste your time in this play stuff, these sandcastles, this will-o'-the-wisp idea of life. Don't spend so much energy and give so much blood just to try to enjoy some temporary manifestation of this material energy that we've become attracted to. And the pure devotee of the Lord is saying, no, this will end soon. The dark days of life will come, as we're reading in the purport, that when the night comes, this is an annihilation. And then the next morning it begins again. So our day will end, regardless of who we are. It's the law of nature. And the pure devotee of the Lord is trying to explain to us the law of nature. But we're so engrossed in this play activity of material world, of life, this bodily conception of life, that we kick and cry and we scream and shout and yell and we don't want to go. We just want a few more minutes. Give me another few minutes, another few years so that I can finish, and then another few more years. So Krishna consciousness is helping us understand that yes, it will end without a doubt. There's no one can circumvent. No one, regardless of who you are. So the Bhagavatam is trying to explain to us, then why waste our time? If we cannot circumvent the laws of nature, then why are we wasting our time in this material world trying to be so-called happy, in reality simply suffering? Look at the austerity that Hiranyakashipu went through. 100 celestial years of austerity. And it was banished like this. 100 years, celestial years, was just thousands of years in this material world calculation. Thousands upon thousands. He spent all that time in austerity and sacrifice and penance and pain. But just in a matter of a moment, it was gone. He couldn't even enjoy it for that long. And we see in the material world, same thing. People are working like asses, like anything, day and night, working so hard to maintain their family, to support their desires for enjoyment. And then at a certain point, it's finished, just like that. And all of a sudden, we should look at this and see, well, what is the use of it? What is the ultimate gain of this? So Bhagavatam and the pure devotee of the Lord, they try to explain to us what is the real essence of life. What is the purpose of life? And Prabhupada so many times, he tells us, sarva dharmam prityajam mam ekam saranam braja aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha yakshami master chaha. We have to surrender to Krishna. This is really the purport. We have to. It's not a question of do I or don't I. You can speculate like that. You can believe any way you want to believe. But the law is there. Just like if you overeat, the law is you will become sick. That is the law. No matter what you do. And we see that that's going on regularly. You go to a store, go to a pharmacy. Isn't there a whole row dedicated to antacid and overeating and commercials? Everybody's overeating. But they want to circumvent the law of nature. They're thinking that by a pill, by some artificial means, they can circumvent it. No. Regardless. When I was growing up, the individuals that became famous for circumventing material energy were like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. And most of you don't even know who those people are, but they were the epitome of enjoyment of material life. They could do anything. They could do no wrong. They could drink. They could smoke. They could womanize. And it was all actually beautiful. But ultimately, what happened? No, it was all ended in a disaster. It was all a waste of time and energy. And what is their condition? What was their future? By all those simple activities, whether they believe it or not, it doesn't really matter. They went to hell. That's the law of nature. That's what's so amazing, that you can speak to someone and they say, well, I don't believe it. So what? Whether you believe it or don't believe it doesn't mean anything anymore. It's no sense. It's simply an unintelligent person who's overcome by the modes of nature and the desire for enjoyment. And it makes no sense. Because it'll work on all of us, regardless. And one will see the court of Yamaraj, without a doubt. And you may argue, you may kick, you may disagree, you may want to fight, but it doesn't matter. All that is simply a waste of time, waste of energy. So why not utilize this energy instead of kicking, screaming, and yelling and trying to develop so many sandcastles? Why not just surrender to Krishna and give this life to the Supreme, which ultimately Hiranyakashipu had to experience by death? Because Krishna comes and gets you one way or another. Either you go voluntarily and go to him voluntarily and very nicely and bow your head down to him, surrender to him, or he'll take you crying, kicking, he'll drag you by this cruel death. And he doesn't have to come down here, although you may want to personally demand the presence of the Lord in front of us. And he may not come. He may come, depending on how and what you do, to request his presence. But he doesn't have to. He just allows the cruel law of nature to deal with us. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to go down and kill 100 demons. He doesn't have to do that. He just sends a tsunami or an airplane crash or some other disaster. And that takes care of so many individuals. And this is the cruel law of nature. And this is how it works. So for us as devotees, we should consider ourselves very fortunate that we've had the opportunity to come in contact with a pure devotee of the Lord. And yes, when we come in contact with it, with that pure devotee of the Lord, it's difficult for us. We scream, we go, no, it can't be. We think, oh, how is that possible? No, I can't. It's not true. I mean, I was meant to enjoy myself. I was meant to be happy. How is that possible? Yes, we may cry in that way, in that particular fashion. But that'll do us no good. It doesn't matter. You may cry, even on your deathbed, we may cry. And we may think it's unfair, it's unfortunate. But it doesn't matter. The law of nature takes effect. So before that happens, it's important for us to develop this real knowledge and surrender to Krishna. Akama sarvakamava moksha kama udarathi tudvrena bhakti yogena yajate purusham param. That regardless of what you want, you know, if you have broader intelligence, whether you're full of material desires, which all of us are, we're full of it. We have so many desires that we want to accomplish in this life. Or even if you're free from material desires, whether you're full of it or not full of it, doesn't matter. Or even if you want to get liberation from this material world, we must surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We must. This is the understanding. And here, Hiranyakashipu was the epitome of a person who's full of material desire. But could he get away from surrendering to the Lord? No. He couldn't get away. And he was full of it to the capacity that all of us can't even conceive. Can't even conceive of his intense desire for enjoyment. But, you know, we're as devotees, we kind of think, Krishna, I don't want a lot. You know, I just want just enough. I don't want a whole bunch. I don't care for a big house, but can I at least have a nice little apartment? You know, I don't want a, you know, super expensive car. But at least can I have like a decent car? So as devotees, we don't want, but that's okay. Because regardless if you want a big, huge, fancy car, or if you want just a little car, a big house, it doesn't matter. One must surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must. And if you don't want any of that, if you don't want a whole bunch or a little bit, but you want liberation, then one must approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It doesn't matter, is the point. And we should take this story to be the essence of what our future is, really. And that is, regardless of our position and our plans and our wealth, whatever it is, one must leave this material world. And the stringent laws of material energy will make sure we will not circumvent it at any cost or price. Never, ever. So let's take this Bhagavatam seriously and the instruction that we're receiving and become serious in our execution of Krishna consciousness and not become whimsical and lackadaisical in our execution, because we can get caught up in this material energy very quickly. It's like the material energy is like a tsunami. You know, when that tsunami comes, it wipes out everything in its path. And you'll not, and I'll not be able to overcome it, no matter how good of a swimmer one is or whatever. It doesn't matter. And that's the material nature. So let us become serious and take up this science very nicely, make progress, and go back home, back to Godhead. So, sorry about this class. I didn't study for it at all. So it was just whatever. Yes.
Thank you for the nice class, Ro. You mentioned a lot about death And I watched recently, I just watched the videos of Prabhupada in his final days, and how he fasted. He fasted, and he was so sober and undisturbed about what was happening to the body. And you know, we maybe have some experience in this world of coming close to death. You know, 2, 3, 4 times. You know, we have experience where we're coming close to death. And my question is, how we can develop this Krishna consciousness, you know, this sobriety in the face of death, because death is a very scary thing for one in the bodily concept.
Well, in the Bhagavatam, there's a verse that says, Shushushro Sharadanasya Vasud Devakataruchi Sian Mahatseva Vipapunya Tirtini Sevanat. It says that if you give service to that great soul or souls that are free from all vice, by that service you'll gain the affinity for hearing about Krishna. And that is the real process, hearing and chanting. So if you serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada in this Krishna consciousness, you'll develop a sincere desire to want to hear about Krishna. And at the time of death, this is what will happen to you. Because you've developed a desire to hear about Krishna, Krishna will give you an opportunity to hear about him at the time of death. And that's how you'll be able to tolerate that most extreme of pain. And that's how you'll actually become strong enough to handle this most intense time. And you saw these videos of Prabhupada. This is where Prabhupada was. And on his deathbed, he was still translating 10th canto Srimad Bhagavatam. How is that possible? Because he was fully absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna. And by the mercy of Prabhupada and the devotees, maybe we'll have that opportunity. We'll be on that in that situation, and there'll be devotees that'll help you remind you of Krishna. Maybe they'll be chanting Hare Krishna, and you'll remember Krishna's name and his pastimes. And if you do, then you'll go back home, back to Godhead. So you're on the right track. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Can you, one of you, make sure you